You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. This coming month, I'd like to announce, after 8 years of doing this show, two of my favorite guests return. On December 7th, Barbara Hand Clow returns and will be focusing on her book, Astrology and the Rising of Kundalini. Another of my favorite guests returns the following week, on December 14th. Dr. Carmen Bolter is an acclaimed Egyptologist who created the incredible DVD series, The Pyramid Code. Then on December 21st, Seven Bomar joins us from South America, so stay tuned. Tonight, my guest is Laura Bruno. Laura is a medical intuitive, life coach, intuitive reader, artist, author, and organic gardener. As an activist for Mother Earth, she grounds spirituality and deep soul work into tangible actions in the soil. Through her local transition movement, Laura works beyond party line politics and left or right brain thinking to whole brain, whole heart, diverse and vibrant community living. She also works to improve fairy realm and human relations and advocates GMO-free zones while recognizing complex issues such as hunger in America, and what she calls the rotten fruits of desperation. She envisions freedom through responsibility, respect for, and alignment with natural law and harmony. You can find her and her other websites at www.laurabruno.wordpress.com. And she has two other websites which she'll mention at the end of the show. But now, let's welcome her to tonight's show. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hi, doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, well, I really appreciate you coming on, and I wouldn't have found you if it hadn't been for Lucas, who posted your wonderful blog post, and he did that on Lucas 2012 info. So I just want to send out a special thanks to Lucas for posting your wonderful blogs.
Yes, thank you, Lucas, for all of the posts that you do everyone's work.
Yes, exactly. So I found out a few more things about you just before the show, and let's just kind of drop into this from wherever we can and find out more about your spiritual journey and what led you to this point now.
Okay. Well, I've always been a very intuitive person, but I fought it for a long time, and then sort of the short version of the story is that after many little brain injuries, I had a big brain injury in 1998, a car accident, and that took away my rational side for 4 years or forever, depending on who you're talking to. But I didn't have it anymore to argue, and it just really came to the forefront, and I found that I was able to help a lot of people with my medical intuitive awareness and just kind of with the way that I have a very different take on life than most people, and I found that that was very healing for a lot of people.
Well, you know, that kind of reminds me of there was a famous story not too terribly long ago on TED Talks about the person who, I think she did brain research, mm-hmm. and she had a stroke. And I can't remember her name, but it's at the
Jill Bolte Taylor, I think. Was
yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, it sounds like you had kind of a similar experience. And I've been in car accidents and not had that experience, so it's kind of a gift, isn't it?
It really was the best thing that ever happened to me in my whole life. And anyone that knows, I had. They call them migraines, but, I mean, they didn't really have a term to describe how bad the headache was. But my first migraine lasted for 16 months. It never went away. And I actually had called my dad that morning when it happened after the brain injury because I thought I must be hemorrhaging. So I called him. He lived 45 minutes away. And I said, I'm going to leave the door unlocked because I might not be alive when you get here. I mean, it was kind of one of those incredibly painful moments. But as I was getting ready to just kind of pass out and I thought maybe not wake up again, I just had this really sudden, just palpable sense, and I was like, oh, you exist. And I don't know who I was talking to or what, but it was just so tangible that there was this whole other realm that I had kind of flirted with that ever since that moment I've never had any doubt about.
About the other side?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I wasn't afraid to die, but it was just kind of like, oh, there really are these other beings there. There really is this overwhelming, overarching consciousness. And, okay, it's not my time to go yet, but that's valuable information. Because before that, I would always kind of flirt with it, or I didn't have this kind of unshakable sense of what's going on around that we don't see or hear.
Well, you know, that really is the crux of so many problems that are being created today, just around consciousness. And, you know, it seems that most people are kind of lulled into this false sense of security, into thinking that either we don't have a soul, or we don't go on, or we can just throw bones over our shoulder and forget about, you know, the earth and the interconnect, you know, of all that is. And, you know, that there really is, there are other realms and multidimensional experiences that are beyond this limited vision that we have as human beings. And yet we can't forget that we are here embodied. And so did that open up other aspects of communication that you may not have expected, like with spirit realms and nature spirits and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, it's just interesting because when I was a child, I used to talk to the trees, and the trees would always talk back to me. And there was this one particular tree near a playground, and I remember one time I lost my favorite hat, and I went and I talked to the tree, and I don't know why I talked to the tree, but I said, I lost my hat, and I really want it. My grandfather gave it to me, and I really want it. And we went back to the playground a couple of days later, and I said, I have to stop and say hi to my tree, and my hat was right there. So,
wow.
I mean,
wow.
I've had experiences like that since I was little.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
Yeah, but after the brain injury, it really kicked up a notch because, first of all, I was totally disabled for 4 years. I mean, I could not do anything.
God.
I couldn't read. I couldn't be under any fluorescent lights without having horrible, horrible migraines. I mean, it was debilitating.
Uh-huh.
But the flip side of that was that I just pretty much laid around on the couch all day with an ice bag on my head most of the time. And so it was like 4 years in Tibet. You know, it wasn't 7 years, but I mean, it was a long time of doing nothing
right.
But meditating. So,
wow.
Yeah, so you start to notice things and lots of synchronicity. And I was raised by a physicist, but not a quantum physicist, just kind of like a practical physicist who didn't believe in any of this stuff, and then a Presbyterian mom who was very highly suspicious of any kind of mystical things. So for me, I didn't jump into everything that I do now right away. It was definitely a process.
Wow. It sounds like you know, you somehow planned this out from beyond this realm. I have a feeling that I did the same thing because of the synchronicities and so on and so forth. And, you know, it does seem to eventually take us. I'm a particularly hard learner, so I need bricks falling on my head usually. But I've learned how to pick up the pace a little faster so that I don't get the bricks and I can just go directly to, you know, the final page or whatever, the book. But, yeah, it sounds like you also recognized that there were things that you couldn't put in your body or take in or ingest, like fluorescent lights, for instance. Did you take medications for your migraines? And if so, how did that work out?
Well, that was kind of what got me onto this whole alternative healing path, because they kept calling me a medical mystery, and it was a workers' comp case, and so they were constantly trying to prove that there's nothing wrong with you or that you're crazy. But meanwhile, shuffling me to all these doctors that are like, ooh, she's really messed up, but we don't know what to do with her. And so they just kept giving me drugs. And fortunately, I have a good intuition, because I had a really bad neck and back injury, too, and they gave me some kind of muscle relaxant. I took one, and I just had this weird feeling and like a verbal message in my head, do not take any more of that. And I was like, okay, I won't. And so when I went back to the doctor a couple months later, he was shuffling through my records, and he got this really alarmed look on his face, and he said, how are you doing with those muscle relaxants? And I said, I'm not taking them. And he said, oh, good, because, you know, we really should have called you, but four people have died from kidney failure with those. And I was like, okay,
wow.
I'm really going to listen from now on.
Wow.
So I got shuffled around to so many different doctors, and finally a friend of mine that was in Seattle was like, this is ridiculous. We must have someone out here who can help you. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time, and so he found this totally alternative guy who was in his 70s, Dr. George Dever. I don't even know if he's still living now, but he was an herbalist, a holistic optometrist, and a craniosacral therapist. And I went out and treated with him for a while to try to be able to get back to go to grad school. I had deferred for a year because I couldn't read. And he said just a funny thing before I left. He said, well, you know, if grad school doesn't work out, you could just move back to Seattle. I need to give my practice to someone. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm an English major. And he said, oh, well, you know, I'm getting older, and I need to pass it on, and you're a healer. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm injured. And he said, no, you're a healer. And I kind of knew this, but I didn't know anybody else knew this about me.
Wow.
So he said, no, we've done an experiment, and the next three people after you, each time that you come into our office, the next three people have these incredible breakthroughs. You leave this energy residue in the room. And I was like, no. And he said, no, we've tested it. You come in three times a week, so that's nine different people. We always schedule different people after you. And he was like, you have a gift. Come back out here and work with me. And, you know, and I ended up coming back out and treating with him more when I couldn't do grad school. And then he hired me as a medical intuitive. And kind of the trade was I was an office assistant, but I did medical intuitive work on his clients in exchange for him teaching me everything he knew about herbs.
Wow. What an amazing story. That is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, that is just, that's so powerful. So go on. Tell us more. Then what happened?
So then I met the person that became my husband, and now ex-husband, but that became this whole other adventure all over the western United States. I'm 40, and I've lived in 42 different addresses now, so we moved a lot. And he was older than I was and had done all kinds of healing things and life coaching and counseling and hypnotherapy and all sorts of stuff, and he got Lyme disease while we were together, and I ended up helping him heal from that through a lot of the natural foods and the natural remedies that I had come to know about. But in the process of it, I ended up taking over his life coaching business temporarily. He kept having to not coach people because with the Lyme disease, it was just too overwhelming for him. And so instead of canceling everyone at the last minute, we would give them the option, well, you can have a medical intuitive session with Laura and a little bit of Reiki afterwards to make up in the difference in cost. And then this went on for a while. And at one point he said to me, well, I think you should become a life coach. And I said, well, why would I ever do that? And he said, well, because you're coaching all my clients. And I was like, oh, so I am.
Absolutely amazing.
So, yeah, life has a funny way of just kind of arranging things for me.
I guess it does. Well, you know, you're not the only one who's had a similar kind of tale of synchronicities. And, you know, probably most of my guests do have something like that going on because, you know, it's kind of scripted, isn't it? Doesn't
mm-hmm,
it feel sometimes
it does.
Like
yeah.
Like you're reading a script, or you're like you're in some kind of magical movie that you're co-creating, but it's already happened, but it hasn't.
Right.
Something
right. It's very
like
precise.
Very precise. And occasionally, it's so precise that literally everything is in synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are really intense periods. I don't know if you have had things like that, but I'm sure you have.
Yeah, I have. And yeah, it's almost like going through life in slow motion and everything is lining up exactly. And then you know you have to really pay attention because...
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep, it's amazing. It cycles within cycles within cycles, and then literally everything is unfolding before your very eyes. And you, the instruction manual is right there, and all you have to do is tune into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, now you got into, obviously you would have gotten into organic foods as part of your process of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And you discovered that things like fluorescent lights and probably food additives and the nature of food itself that's sold at grocery stores doesn't have any life force in it or prana,
mm-hmm.
Or much of it left after being irradiated and treated and genetically modified.
Right.
There isn't much left, especially since the vitamins that are in them are just a very small spectrum of the phytochemicals and nutrients that organic food has from the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, one thing just as background about brain injuries is that they tend to make you really hypersensitive. And I don't know if it's because I had so many brain injuries, you know, little ones, like concussions, or if I was just, you know, wired this way, but I was really hypersensitive before I had my big brain injury.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a threshold game. I mean, you even now, I've pretty much recovered. Like, no one that meets me ever believes that I had a brain injury. But
wow.
If I am under a whole lot of fluorescent lights or a lot of really noisy stuff or around a lot of people's energy that is just very frenetic, then, you know, you can't control all of those things all the time. And so the easiest way that I have found to kind of lower my threshold to a tolerable level is just clean up my diet. And so I don't anymore, now that I live in the Midwest, I don't eat 100% raw vegan. I did for 4 years, but and I was vegan for 8.5. But but if I am feeling overwhelmed or feeling like, oh, I'm going to have a lot of meetings today, or I know I'm going to be under lights, then the easiest way for me to make it that that's a non-issue for me is just to up the raw, fresh, organic food.
Ah, right. And so that kind of does a mini cleansing, and your body is able to cope with some of those stressors that I find are bothering me as well, being an empath and
mm-hmm.
a sensitive and intuitive since a child.
Mm-hmm.
And probably several brain injuries. Now that you've talked about it, I think, I must have had a brain injury or two because, you know, I feel like your story relates to the way that I perceive the
mm-hmm.
energies as well.
It's very common. I mean, when I published my brain injury book, If I Only Had a Brain Injury, which covers Lyme disease and brain injury and multiple chemical sensitivities and all of these kind of medical mysteries where people don't really know what to do with them, all of these people that bought the book just because they knew me and they wanted to support me, they read the book and they were like, oh, you know, I never thought of it, but I got knocked out in a soccer game, or, oh, I had a car accident and I lost consciousness. And it's like all of these people, it's so common that we don't even think about it, but it's a very effective way of rewiring your brain.
Aha. Well, that's interesting. You know, I have had I've had many guests who are researchers in near-death experiences, and one of my favorite recurring guests is P.M.H. Atwater, who has written probably 20 books on the subject, and she's written the big book of near-death experiences, and she's kind of on the cutting edge, and I think she's in her 70s now, but she has developed some really wonderful research that is backed up, and that is that when a person has a near-death experience or something close to it, that there is a rewiring that can occur out of the chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Just it seems that the chaos of the near-death experience creates this slingshot effect,
mm-hmm.
and that people come back definitely altered, even if they don't acknowledge it right away, that there is an intuitive connection and the left brain kind of becomes less active. The right brain is, you know, on all cylinders,
mm-hmm.
Or beyond cylinders, right?
Right.
So now, did you begin, did you grow your own food, or how did you...
Well, for a long time, I didn't have a garden because with my ex-husband, he just liked to move a lot, and so we were literally moving every 2 to 6 months. So, I mean, there was no time to actually have a garden. But we lived in a lot of places where I had access to just phenomenally delicious, prepared raw vegan food, and so I really got very spoiled. And then I wrote the Lazy Raw Foodist Guide in my research, and I'm putting that in quotes, but it really was research for that, was to eat at all of these great restaurants. And so,
what a nice way to do it. That's a great idea.
Yeah. But then when I moved to Madison, which was late 2010, I had my first garden there, and I've gardened indoors and outdoors ever since. So I've had winter gardens. I have a winter garden outside now, but in the past I've had indoor winter gardens, like herbs on the windowsill and that sort of thing. And then now that we moved to Goshen, Indiana, and we actually have some land, I have a really big, crazy garden. So,
oh, nice.
So, yeah, it's good.
Nice. Well, I'm kind of working on the same thing, a little bit behind you on the timing, but the synchronicity is there. And I have a few acres up in Northern California, and I've worked towards, you know, the Findhorn experiment,
mm-hmm.
where they worked with the nature spirits and communing with everything that's alive. In other words, as you know, you can see that everything is living, even the things that we ordinarily consider inanimate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really one of the guests that I've had on has literally met divas, fairies, elementals, and creatures whose home she saw and was able to communicate with. And they were like elves and other creatures that are metaphoric,
mm-hmm.
and very real. So... have you also found that you are able to communicate? Obviously, if you can talk to a tree as a child, you must be able to talk to all kinds of things by now.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, and this goes back to childhood, too. Have you ever read those books, The Borrowers? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
So we had this book series called The Borrowers when I was a kid, and they were basically about brownies, if you know what the brownies are, the little fairies.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And so there were these little, you know, 12-inch tall fairy people, and it was a story, but I totally believed it. And the idea was they were called the borrowers because they would take all of your items that you misplaced and that you couldn't figure out where they were. Oh, the borrowers took them. Well, I would actually, like, steal things from my mom's sewing cabinet. I would get messages from them, like, we need a matchbox or we need a spool of thread. And so I would actually take the things and leave them out for them, and they would disappear.
Wow.
And my mom would say, well, where did that go? And I'm, oh, well, I left it over there for the borrowers. I guess they really needed it. So, and I mean, for Christmas, I would ask my parents if they could, you know, tell Santa to tone it down on the roof. Like, they were making too much jolly noise up there.
Wow.
So, I mean, I've always had this kind of dimensional bleed through that everybody thought was kind of silly. But then... I found that, I mean, my boyfriend David calls it, we need the eggs. There's that joke, like, my brother thinks he's a chicken. Oh, well, why don't you do something about it? And, well, because we need the eggs. He's kind of like, whatever works. And so I will have negotiations with fairies in our yard. And the weed whacker was a big one, because when we took this land. It was incredibly crazy overgrown with weeds out the wazoo, but our landlord said we could do whatever we wanted to it, so that was kind of the incentive. But, I mean, I was afraid of our yard in the beginning because it was just so wild. And so sometimes I would have to have the weed whacker out because otherwise the city would be here, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And so they would argue with me about the weed whacker, and I would get hit with these things, and nobody else would. And and so finally, one day, I just said, fine, I'll let this area grow since you're just always attacking me every time I try to weed whack it. So I let it grow, and somebody, I don't know if it was our landlord or the city or whatever, but somebody came by one day and mowed it down to a quarter inch.
And I
was like, see, I told you guys that you need to work with me. And I never had a problem with a weed whacker since.
that's how it's done. That is how it is done.
Yeah.
You know, the guest that I was talking about mentioned walking the land, and that's something that I notice when I'm drawn out to walk my dog. I'll look down and find all kinds of things. I mean, my attention will go to the ground, and there's something that doesn't belong there, or there's something that's a gift from the birds. And today, just tonight, I was moving some homegrown squash that I have on the countertop, and I thought, well, I'll just move this lamp over, and I had to unplug it, and that required me turning over the electrical strip, and underneath it, coiled up and unrecognizable, was this little object, and I thought, what in the heck is that? Is that a piece of food or something? It's the countertop, for crying out loud. It was a millipede curled up. I don't know how it got there, but I picked it up. It was alive, and I gently held it in my hand and talked to it, and then took it outside and placed it underneath some grass.
That's awesome. I had a millipede that was like a pet of mine.
Love them.
In 2010, when I lived in Chicago, I was on the top floor. I could look out over Lake Michigan, and it was just, you know, the wind would be blowing and everything, and I had a weird sleep schedule that year, and so I'd be up really late, and at 2 a.m., this little millipede would come out, and it would hang out by the wall, and it would just stare at me while I'm working on my computer and writing and stuff, and then I started making sprouts at home. And I would put a towel over the container that had the sprouts, and I came home one day, and the millipede was, like, babysitting my sprouts. And so it became, I mean, it freaked people out. They're like, I can't believe you're, like, friends with a millipede. That's just too weird. But this thing, it would come out at night, and it would never, you know, interfere with my space or anything. It didn't go in my sprouts, or it just would sit on the towel if I had sprouts, or it would come over and hang out by the wall with me while I worked on my computer.
Oh, that is so cool. That is wonderful. And have you also had occasionally a praying mantis just show up out of the blue and you look up and there's one on the ceiling?
I had that happen for the first time, actually, maybe 2 months ago. I had asked for a praying mantis to come to our garden because we were having a bug problem or something, and I was like, hey, I would like you to show up. And then I totally forgot about it, and then I went outside. I got this message to go out our front porch and turn on the light, and there was really no reason for me to do it, but I did it because it was such a bizarre request. So I walk outside, I turn on the light, and I looked out the front window, and there was this huge praying mantis just staring right at me like, I came, okay?
Where's the bugs? Where's my dinner? Yeah, they're amazing creatures. Mm-hmm. I just extremely intelligent, and you know, I can never figure any of these things out. Of course, you know, the left brain goes crazy, so it just shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's so funny that parents tell their kids often. You hear this now: don't play with your food. And I discovered that the food is playing with us. You know, it's alive and it's talking to us, and especially if it's living food, but even cooked food can talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's no wonder that kids get in trouble because they can tune into this and they're just shut down. So parents, if you're out there, be careful how you train your children. It's probably good to open their minds, although they're probably the ones opening your minds.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, we had this little kid one time. I had a meeting for Transition Goshen at our house, and one of the guys that was coming had to bring his little boy, who is the size of our house gnomes that we have in the house. So he was just fascinated because they were eye to eye. But David and I had gone through this really long period where we hadn't had any tortilla chips or anything. We were like, it was the summer. We were eating mostly raw. But the night before, we had gone to the new Whole Foods and we had bought a bag of potato chips and put it in the cupboard. And Arthur, this little boy, just starts pointing at the cupboard and going, "Chips! Chips! I want chips!" And his dad was trying to quiet him down and everything. I'm so embarrassed. You know? And I said, "Well, actually, we did buy chips last night for the first time in many, many months. I think they're talking to him." So, yeah, the kids are much more aware than most people realize.
Oh, that is so awesome. That is so awesome. Well, you know, I'm wondering if you would like to talk a little bit about some of the things that I know are staring us in the face, and also about the energies right now. For instance, I know that you're concerned about hunger in America and some of the disparities that exist between those who are on the affluent side and may not realize that there are things going on here that are really intolerable to life forms, and that there's suffering is unnecessary. How do you address those issues, and how do you see this period of time in 2013 as we're approaching the end of it? It seems like a very intense, energetic time, yes?
Oh, I've never been so happy to make it through a month as November 2013. It was such an intense month. There were so many things that could have happened, and I think did happen in other versions of this month. But I know. I was very busy in dream time. And, yeah, I'm just so grateful that it's, you know, on the East Coast, it's late on November 30th. So, yeah, very, very intense energies. But, yeah, as far as hunger goes, I mean, I have, like, a multi-layered concern with that. One is that, first of all, just the whole idea of food security, we're all food insecure, or most people are actually food insecure if you take into account, you know, most of your food travels 2,000 miles before you eat it. There's all the processing. There's all of this kind of infrastructure that's required for how most people eat. And so even people that are like, "Oh, I've never been food insecure a day in my life," it's like, well, do you have your own garden? Do you can your own food? Do you have, you know, full ability to grow food all winter long? If not, then you're food insecure too. It just hasn't shown up yet. So that's like a kind of a meta concern, because I think that just makes, that's a vulnerability for our entire Western way of life. And my other concern is that where there's a vulnerability, there's also great potential for manipulation. And where I see that really playing out is just with the politics of hunger right now. I mean, we've got 50 million people on food stamps. We've got all of these federally subsidized lunches, and most of that subsidized food is you know, junk. It's GMO processed poison that is being pumped into our children, and the food banks are so overloaded, and the soup kitchens are so overloaded, and the food pantries, that food that was intended as kind of emergency food is now what these people eat day in and day out, and there's not the fresh food, and it has an effect on your consciousness, it has an effect on your health, and so a lot of these people who are poor because they have health concerns, their health concerns are getting made exponentially worse by all of the junk that they're eating, but then they're kind of trapped in this poverty cycle. So that's another layer. But then another layer on top of that is this whole GMO thing, that if we wanted to ban GMOs in this country right now, we would have people rioting in the streets, but not for a GMO ban. We would have people rioting in the streets for food, because right now the poorest segment of our society, which is really starving for nutrients and could very easily be starving, period, if you cut off all of the access to the cheap processed foods, which are all GMO, then, I mean, we've got to solve this on a local level with cheaper access to local organic food before mm-hmm. we go thinking that we're just going to take away all the access to all the GMOs. Like, that's not going to fly in this country right now.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I recently, just a few, I think 2 weeks ago, had a wonderful guest from Poland, Julian Rose,
mm-hmm.
who successfully was able to form a coalition in Poland to ban GMOs. So
mm-hmm.
they have done it over there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so he was one of those people that returned to organic farming and then discovered GMOs and worked
mm-hmm.
through the political system, which was very amenable at that time. And he was moving in those circles. So he was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I think it's possible, but hunger is an enormous issue in America right now.
Well, yes, and as you said, the nature of hunger is about nutrients. So when you're not getting nutrients, your body is craving anything to put in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we're putting things in it and drinking tap water, which contains fluoride, chlorine,
mm-hmm.
and about 35 to 40 other harmful, toxic
mm-hmm.
items, including nuclear waste.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes on and on. Those things all create a situation where people can be dumbed down and
mm-hmm.
can't think straight.
Yeah.
If you're not getting nutrients, as you know.
Yeah, and I mean, then the other thing, and it's just, it's really sad, and it really is a shameful thing that America just, we need to address this. Like, this is kind of in the shadow of America right now, is that people are unable to feed their children. And when that happens, I mean, I've seen people who don't feel that they can provide for their children. There's a level of desperation that kicks in where, you know, if it goes on long enough, you will do anything to be able to feed your children and to be able to shelter your children. I mean, we need to look at that and realize if we want to have bigger changes. And I mean, I am all for a GMO ban. I think they're toxic and they're, you know, all of the things that go along with it are ruining
right.
our culture and our world and our land and everything.
Right.
But it's like you also have to look at what's staring you in the face. And I mean, this is it's kind of a moral outrage that we've let it get this far, where there are so many people. I mean, we have so much farmland in this country, and
mm-hmm.
we are so capable of being self-sufficient in this country, and we're just not. And that's something that we can each address on the local level through community gardens, through local politics, through encouraging garden initiatives, you know, incentives for people to be able to grow in their front lawn. You know, change the legislation if you have things that say that you can't grow things in your front yard and that's the only sunny spot. So there's a lot of things supporting local farmers. But hunger is, it's a huge, huge issue. And I think the problem is that a lot of times people that are eating organic food and are involved in spirituality, I mean, you start living like a kind of a nicer life. And I mean, that's wonderful, but it's also like if you want to make this kind of a major change, then you've also got to kind of be practical and look at, okay, who else is this affecting, and how do we address that?
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, everything is interconnected, so it's not like I can have mine and you can't have yours, or vice versa, you know,
mm-hmm.
Playing the victim and being the person who is the abused person, but it also requires a level of awakening in addition to this. So that's one of the levels that I think you might have been talking about,
mm-hmm.
that there's a spiritual malady here that's not being addressed, and there is also a kind of overlaying conspiracy by the multinational corporations, and I hate to throw those words out there, but this is the way it works,
mm-hmm.
To create these very conditions so that scarcity and fear are emphasized, and that drives people to behave in ways that are conducive to their growth
mm-hmm.
and not conducive to the individual human experience into life itself. So everything suffers as a result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so I mean, it's a fine line of compassion because you can't force these things onto it. We had a whole hunger week. It was called Share the Bounty Week that we organized in Goshen and got together people that are running some organic farms that were created. It's called Seed to Feed, and the whole purpose of these farms is to grow food from seed to provide to food banks and food pantries so that they have fresh local produce to offer to people. But one of the things that came up in a lot of our discussions was that even when they have fresh produce, people don't know what to do with it.
So
there's,
right.
You know, there's
right.
a layer of education there, but there's
yeah.
also just food deserts in some areas of the country where there's just no fresh local food available. And, you know, people might have to take 3 buses in order to be able to shop at a grocery store, but the convenience store is there with the Twinkies, you know?
Wow, yes, yes. Yes, this is a very, very complex problem, as you point out. And one of the things that Julian had talked about that's going on in the UK are guerrilla gardeners.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
these are people, you know, from every walk of life who go out in the middle of the night with wheelbarrows and shovels and seeds, and they dig up various patches all over the UK, and they plant gardens, and they
mm-hmm.
feed it and tend it. And then, of course, you know, after a certain period of time, if they're not rooted out, they produce fruit and vegetables and things like that. So when the police come along and say, all right, what's going on here? We got to stop this. And then the local people realize what a valuable thing that is. And they don't want them to go after them. So there are all kinds of different approaches, and guerrilla gardening is just one.
Oh,
rooftop
it's
gardens. Yeah, exactly. You kind of feel like you're doing something to the system, and you're also producing the result at the same time, and it's a win-win situation. Rooftop gardens, apartment complex deck gardens, mm-hmm. indoor gardening. I mean, there's just no end of the possibilities if people really put a pencil to it and start thinking about it. And maybe that's one of the problems. We've gotten so busy and so wrapped up in survival
mm-hmm.
that we haven't taken time to contemplate how we can solve these problems and just take little steps. The children often have to show us.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a little girl who grew food just to as an experiment. And her food was so, the pumpkins and so on and so forth were so huge, she started giving them to hungry people, and now they have an enormous business, and it's about feeding, creating, duplicating what she created, and giving food to people who need it. So
mm-hmm.
Obviously, it doesn't seem logical to put all the onus on one little child, but she's changed the world through her little efforts,
mm-hmm.
and now... If each person just did a little bit of something to solve these problems, there wouldn't be any. We wouldn't have to be having this conversation.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it really changes people when you start to garden. I mean, see it, our neighbors had never gardened before. Our landlords own our house and the house next door. And, I mean, I have this big garden, and I was giving them tomatoes and jalapenos and stuff all summer, but they saw me out being crazy garden lady that I am, and so they had a little garden on their porch, and, you know, sometimes I forgot to water the tomato plant, so I'd go over and sneak some water on it and stuff, but they were so excited about it because they were growing things, and
yeah.
you know, I gave them cilantro seeds, so basically they grew salsa, but it's contagious, you know, when kids
yes.
start to see, and this was the children, it was not the parents, it was the children that were, they would ask me, well, what are you doing? Why are you moving that? What is that you're putting there? And the next thing I know, they had asked their parents if they could get some pots, and so they grew their little cilantro. And
wow.
And so, I mean, it does happen, but I know, have you ever heard of Will Allen and his company Growing Power up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin?
No, I'm writing that down as we speak. Will Allen and
Will
Growing
Allen
Power.
And it's okay. Growing Power, a phenomenal organization, but it's inner city Milwaukee, and it's a year-round greenhouse using vermiculture, so the warm dorms and everything. But, I mean, a lot of the people that are working there would normally be the kinds of kids that would be joining gangs. But instead, they're going in and they're learning how to grow food. And he's got it arranged so that he can provide a lot of the food for the local school system. He gives talks around the country. He's working with Detroit to help them get things up and running. And, I mean, there's pockets of people doing these things all over the United States.
Well, you know, that's incredibly awesome that, you know, these things are going on and we just don't hear about it. So it seems like part of what I see going on now in 2013 and on into 2014 is all of these light stations or lighthouses are going to start linking up, kind of like radiant zones or, you know, well, you can call them whatever you want, but basically it's people who have found their passion and excitement, and it's always about some kind of return to nature, it seems,
mm-hmm.
and a return to source, and sharing the excitement of that journey, and seeing how situations that are seemingly hopeless, that require larger prison systems, and those become corporations, and then the food that's channeled in there is, you know, it goes on and on and on,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes an industry. Then it's marketed on Wall Street, and so there's a business that is advantageous to those people who want to make money, but we're going beyond the need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The need to make money is no longer an issue. The need to be happy and joyous and free and to live in abundance is going to be the pressing issue in 2014, I think, and connecting these lights up.
Mm-hmm.
So that
and it is already happening. I mean, I didn't know that Bloomington, Indiana is a transition town. I was having a conversation with a business down there that I have an idea of how they could expand and do a lot of work that would be really synergized with Goshen. And I just said, oh, well, do you know what a transition town is? You know, we had this meeting and we brought all these different people together and they said, oh, good for you. Yeah, we're a transition town too. We're right on with you. You know, do you know Growing Power? We're trying to do this. So, like, people are already starting to link up. And, I mean, the other thing just to address the money component is, yes, all of these things are more important than money, but at the same time, it doesn't have to be either or. I mean, there's this idea of kind of the triple bottom line, and one of the bottom lines is that you can make money doing things in a natural, earth-friendly, people-friendly way. You know, you don't have to rape the earth and screw people in order to make money. You can actually have a business model that is profitable and that is respectful.
Yes, absolutely. That's just right on. In fact, I hope that you and I can stay in touch and continue to communicate about these things, because I'm in the process of hooking up this local area with other larger areas, and you seem to be somebody who can empower anybody to take the reins and kind of work outside the box a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What are some
it's one advantage of having moved so often.
Oh, right,
I know a lot of
course,
people in a
of
lot of
course.
Areas.
How perfect is that? I mean, you couldn't script a better situation than to have somebody moving all over the place and to find out where these things are going on or where they're needed or where
mm-hmm.
they're possible. So what are some of the other things that you have seen and learned that you want to share with us tonight that might inspire us?
Well, one of the other things that I see as a real need, I mean, there's that whole divide and conquer mentality out there, and it's been really, really effective. And I just feel like with anything to do with the environment, the whole idea of sustainability and environmentalism and green has been so co-opted by Agenda 21 and all of that, that, you know, anybody that's aware of that often will just kind of have their eyes glaze over, or they get just irrationally just really, really angry if you even mention those words, even people that don't know what those words actually have as connotations. And so I think, you know, there are ways to present the importance of local organic food and gardening and finding ways of having community food security at the community level. I think that for somebody that's in like a libertarian mindset or Tea Party or something like that, these are values that they actually could come to appreciate, because it's like saying no thank you to federal intervention or UN intervention. If you're handling your affairs by yourself, you don't need somebody to come in and do all that stuff. So
exactly.
I just think that there needs to be a little better translation between kind of the radical, organic, frou-frou, pie-in-the-sky kind of left law of attraction and then kind of the very hardcore right. It's like, actually, these people can communicate. And if you get both sides, you know, pushing for the same thing, then it's really healing in a community to have that, but also really practical, because then you actually get things done instead of just fighting over the details all the time.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a perfect place for us to segue into how people can reach you, because we're just about out of time. And I mean, that if people just hear that last sentence that you said about working together, and that we can do that, that would be worth the whole show. And it's been a wonderful show with you, Laura. Just wonderful.
Oh, thank you. It's been really fun.
So if you can mention your various email, your various websites. I'm just having a brain fart here. and I would love to have you back on the show, because these are really important issues, and you just have such a handle on it, and you have such a wonderful, intuitive approach. I just love chatting with you. So,
thank you.
Do come back, okay?
And share
your websites with us so that people can find you and find out more about all of this that we're talking about tonight.
Okay. So my main blog and website that has all my services and everything on it, as well as a whole bunch of articles, is laurabruno.wordpress.com, and that's L-A-U-R-A. B as in boy, runo.wordpress.com. And then I have a brain injury healing book called If I Only Had a Brain Injury.com.
Right.
Kind of like if I only had a brain, but it's if I only had a brain injury, and it does use the Wizard of Oz as a metaphor.
Right.
And then the Lazy Raw Foodist Guide, so just lazyrawfoodist.com. And then I also have a novel. I don't have the website for that novel anymore, but it's called Shazandra and the Gates of Mu.
Ooh, that sounds intriguing.
Yeah, it's all about Lemuria and Sedona. And
oh, my God. We could do a whole show on that. Really? I'm serious. I just did a series of 20 videos with Andrew Bartus about our galactic history, and it was so fascinating that I transcribed it all. And for people who are curious about that, they can go to www.sovereignmedia.net and Galactic History, and you'll find all of those for free. And they're also on my free YouTube channel, which is Zany Mystic Radio. So,
yeah, I was listening to those, and a lot of it was information that really checked with information that I've gotten in past life readings for other people, or in just creating that book. So.
Wow, well, that's interesting. So let's keep in touch, Laura, and I think we have a lot more to talk about. And, you know, it's just wonderful to discover you. It's like finding diamonds in the sand, you know. It really is.
Thank you.
You're just a treasure. So thank you again for coming on the show tonight, and we'll be talking more, and we'll have you back again in 2014 if you'd like to.
I would love to. Thanks so much, and thanks for all that you're doing, because this is a great resource that you provide, too.
Well, thank you. And good night, everybody.